For those of you who don't know me, I'm Lisa Smith, the Chief Program Officer here at the network. And this pop-up affinity group for emergency financial and case management affinity group, we decided to do it because we know this moratorium is coming up June 30th. Well, I really didn't, but your two co-chairs did. So they thought this would be important to do. So I want to introduce them, Jen Glazer from Jewish Family Services of LA, and Rebecca Konefsky from Jewish Family Services of Lower Fairfield County are going to be taking over and introducing our guest speaker. So thank you for joining us, and take it away, Rebecca.
Okay. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. And just as Lisa was saying, Jen and Lisa and I were talking about how the moratorium is coming to an end, and we felt like it was extremely important to address that issue, because I'm sure if we are all starting to feel the pressure from our constituents, our clients, as they fall off of these rent protection programs. So we invited two wonderful guest speakers today. And I would like to introduce Laura Rogers of JFS of Atlantic County, New Jersey. Laura is here to share information about how JFS Atlantic is preparing for the crisis. Laura will also discuss how JFS Atlantic is joining with advocates across New Jersey to obtain legislative relief and calling for strategic use of federal funding to solve the issues. A special guest of Laura's is Arnold Cohen of the Housing Community Development Network of New Jersey. Arnold is the Senior Policy Director for the Housing Community Development Network of New Jersey, and he serves as liaison for the Community Development Network in their role as New Jersey State Partner with the National Low Income Housing Coalition. So Arnold will then, following Laura's presentation, Arnold will provide a federal overview of the moratorium's end, impact, and strategies for advocacy and use of federal dollars. Okay, so Laura, why don't we go ahead and spotlight you? Oh, I'm not the host.
I'm going to ask Arnold to start and reverse that a little bit. And it's we're really lucky to have captured some of Arnold's time. He is truly an expert. And Arnold, thank you so much for your generosity in joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all. It really is a pleasure to be with you all. This is a very critical time, as you all know. It is also a time of opportunity. We really have a once in a generation, maybe once in a lifetime opportunity, given who Congress is, who the president is, to be able to really address some of the long-standing housing issues that your clients have faced and come up with some really some real solutions. So let me kind of lay out three different things. You know, one is, what are dollars have your municipalities, counties, states received through the CARES Act, through the American Rescue Plan to address housing? So that as the eviction moratorium is lifted in some places, in New Jersey, we're lucky enough where we might have the eviction moratorium in place till January, but that's not true in most of the countries. You know what resources are there and can be involved in helping direct those resources so that they're used in the best ways. So one is that there's emergency rental assistance that has been received by every state in the nation, and jurisdictions that qualify. Here in New Jersey, there's two municipalities that qualify to have their own programs, and a variety of different counties that have their own programs. And these are dollars to be able to help your clients face back rent, forward rent, utilities, to make sure they stay securely housed. There is a emergency rental vouchers that are coming through the public housing authorities that distribute vouchers, and but it has to be a partnership with the COCs. So they have to have a memorandum of understanding, and the COC will then say which clients are most needy in terms of being eligible for those emergency housing vouchers. So it's in addition to what housing vouchers are out there now to enable somebody who is at the brink of homelessness to be able to get securely housed and only pay 30% of their income towards that housing cost. The third thing that's out there now is the Emergency Solutions Grant, the ESG program, received additional dollars through the home, in partnership with the HOME program. And these are dollars to address homelessness, either in the short term or in long term, to enable a jurisdiction to be able to buy a motel, hotel, vacant property, and turn that into permanent affordable housing. And then the fourth allocation that states have just gotten is the Homeless Assistance Fund. And so these are dollars to help homeowners avoid foreclosure, being able to stay securely housed. And states are currently coming up with their guidelines for how they're going to spend that money. So here in New Jersey, we just, deadline for submission of comments is June 24th. And then the state submits those their plan to the federal government. And then once their plan is accepted, then they're able to get those dollars to help homeowners stay housed. And so all those are opportunities for folks on the ground to be involved either with helping to advise your finance agency about how those homeowner funds should be spent, or working with public housing authorities and COCs about the emergency grants, or making sure that the emergency rental assistance program is reaching everybody that it needs to reach. Here in New Jersey, we're successful in getting money from what's called the New Jersey Pandemic Relief Fund, and the state to be able to put together what's called Housing Help New Jersey, to let everybody in the state know in different languages about all the different relief that's available for them. So it's the different ways of getting involved to spread the word and make sure that everybody knows what is available and how they can access what's available. Looking forward, the HUD budget, the president's HUD budget is a 15% increase over last year, which is really tremendous. There's homeless assistance funding that would support an additional 100,000 households, including survivors of domestic violence and homeless youth. There's money there to expand tenant-based rental assistance to 200,000 additional households. So these are some of the things that we need to be fighting for to make sure they stay in the final budget. We're at the beginning of a process that's going to take us through October before there's a final HUD budget in place. The other thing that's ongoing that you've all heard about, I'm sure, is the infrastructure bill. This is really spending, and this there's $318 billion there for housing. This is over a 10-year period. So this is not, this is really infrastructure looking at things in the long term. But people fought hard to make sure that housing is considered as part of infrastructure. And the bill would includes money for rental assistance. Again, President Biden, when he was running for office, talked about the possibility of rental assistance being universal. Right now, one out of every four families that qualify by income to be eligible for rental assistance receive any rental assistance. So three quarters of people who are eligible don't receive any kind of help at all. Very different than food stamps, where anybody who's eligible by income receives help. So hopefully the president starts moving towards that goal of universal rental assistance. There is a Dear Colleague letter that your representatives and senators can sign that asks that any infrastructure bill that moves forward includes three main pillars. One is the moving towards universal rental assistance. Two is $70 billion to repair and preserve public housing. Because public housing, as you all know, is really, for many people, it's the only housing that they can afford to be in. And it's been neglected for the past decade in terms of any kind of repair. And then the third is $45 billion for the National Housing Trust Fund. The National Housing Trust Fund is legislation that was signed into law by President Bush back in 2008. It's housing for people at the lowest income, below 30% of the area median income. And there's money that each state has currently, but it's very small compared to what's needed. But the years that it's been out there shows that it's been very effective in helping people who are homeless or victims of domestic violence or people living in prisons to be successfully housed in decent housing that they can afford. And so a major expansion of the National Housing Trust Fund is key to ending homelessness in this country and helping the people that you see on a daily basis be able to secure affordable, decent housing. So those are our opportunities that are there. Like Laura said, the National Low Income Housing Coalition, and I can share all their information, is really at the forefront of leading that policy advocacy. If people haven't seen it, they have a weekly memo that is really the best information on federal housing programs, policies, and they're a great group to be part of. They have a sign-on letter for organizations right now to be part of a campaign to get what they're calling the House campaign. H-O, capital U, capital S, so us in house, to move forward with those three goals that I talked about earlier. So I'm gonna not take too much time and leave it there and pass it on to Laura, but just wanna give people that kind of brief view on kind of what the opportunities are and what's out there now. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Arnold. Do you have some time to stay for a couple of questions now?
Yep. Great. I'm here for as long as you need me.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. All right. So
all the National Housing Coalition at 4 o'clock. So we got plenty.
And I put their website in the chat. Someone's asking, how do you get access to the information? So their website can take you to other state partners as well, right? And
exactly. So we're a state partner in New Jersey. Each state has a state partner that really is at the forefront of leading those advocacy efforts.
And the information that you just shared about, you know, the big picture, the dollars that have already arrived, that, you know, really we need to be watchdogs of and make sure that they're getting out in the right format. So, you know, I know for us in JFS Atlantic, we sort of insinuate ourselves into processes to make sure that we're knowing where the dollars are going so that our clients can access them. Sometimes, surprise, surprise, the dollars can get politicized and not end up exactly where they're supposed to go. But this is a lot of money coming from the federal government to the states down to the local government. So it's really about getting in relationship to these different areas. The COCs, or the continuum of cares, are the local committee, homeless planning continuums that are a good place to be a part of. But the overview, Arnold, do you have a one pager of what you just said, or a link to some of that we can share?
I have one page I can get to you. Absolutely.
That's great. Thanks so much. Okay. So Arnold will get that to us. Any other questions for Arnold? Jen?
I had a quick question. When you said that CalFresh, everyone can get it, you didn't mean many people are eligible but don't know to get it or don't have it. You're saying the money runs out in these situations before people can get it. Is that what you were saying?
I'm sorry, in terms of which program now?
The rental relief.
Yeah. So in terms of you know, again, the experience and the National Income Housing Coalition actually has a database and a dashboard of 400 different programs across the country. And they really vary in terms of who, you know, how effective they've been at getting those dollars out.
So in some cases, are the money still sitting there?
Absolutely. Yes. Well, in a lot of cases, the monies are still sitting there.
And I was curious, one more question on California is from what we understand, may extend, may not. It's supposed to end June 30th, our protections as well. Do you have a sense of how many states are going to extend versus how many will end?
I can find out for you. I don't
know. No, that's okay. I was just curious if that's being tracked at the national level.
It is. Oh, it's definitely being tracked at the national level. Yeah. We've been, you know, as you can imagine, you know, focused here in New Jersey in terms of.
Yeah. You know, we're really hoping it extends for us. Yeah.
And then the other thing that each state has is each state got allocation of money from the American Rescue Plan. And some states, including California, are choosing to spend some of their state allocation on housing. And so we're in the middle of a campaign to try to get New Jersey to do that. But I think there's like about a dozen states that are spending some of their own state allocation in addition to money that's directed to specific programs.
Yeah. I think California just made an announcement today about some back rent, using some of that for back rents. And those dollars, Arnold, are just dollars that just go right to state budgets as relief from the pandemic. And then
again, there's very specific guidelines on how they can be used. Mm-hmm. So again, it's not supposed to be used to fill a budget hole.
Got it. Yeah.
But it can be used for any kind of housing relief as a result of the pandemic that a state wants to do, in addition to other programs that got direct assistance. So it's flexible dollars to address the specifics of your individual state, because each state is different.
So I'm sitting here thinking that all of these individuals are working in, you know, JFS agencies, and how are they getting the money? Are they filling out the applications, or is their agency filling out the application, or does everyone here know how to fill out all the different kinds of applications? It seems like it's a lot of work, right? Or is it not?
Well, I can speak for California. It'd be interesting to hear from other people. We're trying to keep up with it to help our clients fill out the applications. We, at this point, can't get the money ourselves as an agency. We have some pass-through money that we try to do to help in certain situations, but we have to stay on top of all of this to know when we can apply for grants, because we had clients asking for rent when they only had to pay 25% of their rent. And to help them with the notifications, our legal teams are really, like Bate Sedek is our nonprofit legal, are helping apply, but they've had all kinds of problems in California because the application is so complex, right? And the landlords aren't cooperating.
I can imagine.
So that's our experience.
Mm-hmm. What other people have? Other kinds of experiences? Have they been trying to get money for their clients for rent?
In Cleveland, we have, I just think that they've been overwhelmed. So the system, you need to go into a portal. And the challenge is that if you don't have absolutely every single piece of paper or a document needed to scan and upload, you can't even finish the application. Mm-hmm. So and then it gets in a queue, but you don't really know where you are in the queue. So it requires advocacy behind the scenes. And once you advocate, they're absolutely tremendous. It would be challenging as an individual, in my opinion, to just necessarily go on your own and be out there with no idea when you're going to hear back.
And you know, there's guidance from the federal government that says that a client should be able to self-attest to their income if they're having difficulty getting documents during COVID. So just, you know, as an FYI.
Ours require things, Arnold, such as copies of the social security cards of every member of the household. There are just different pieces that what I find is under stress, documents that might be readily available aren't necessarily so readily available.
Which is why guidance from Treasury says that people should be able to self-attest to what their income is, because you're absolutely right. It is very difficult to get some documents.
Mm-hmm. Even when you're not under stress.
Yeah.
Get those documents.
Yeah, no. And especially during this time of, you know, COVID, right, where a lot of things are still shut down.
Yeah. Our motor vehicle, you still can't get into it locally. They're just having the hardest time with that to get IDs. But I think advocacy is really important, either as an individual agency, or if you go to the National Low Income Housing Coalition's website and look for the state partners, like, there's no one like Arnold anywhere, but there are other agencies that are state partners that are great for JFSs to get involved with. I'm lucky enough to sit on the board of the Housing and Community Development Network in New Jersey, and Arnold and that they call themselves the network too, so I get a little confused sometimes, but they bring us together from all over the state to advocate and to bubble up these things like you just reported about all of the ID needed, which is contrary to the Treasury's advice, and the state should not be doing that. So they can help take that on. So it's not just, you know, you having to do that advocacy.
Are people feeling successful with what they're doing in other states or communities? Has anyone been doing it besides Jen and Janice? You have to have a name that begins with a J, I guess. Jamie, how about you? I'm kidding.
We have Lauren. A program. We're in Raleigh, North Carolina, Cary, Raleigh, Wake County. And we have a program we've been successful in referring people to that have applied. I think I talked about it last time in the group, but we have somebody, but the programs are different based on county. We typically just work with people in Wake County, but every so often we're asked for somebody that is outside the area because there's not a JFS there. And their programs definitely differ a lot. But the one in Wake County, it's definitely a waiting game. There's definitely some communication bumps with the agency, but it's usually worth the wait. I've had clients who've had several months of rent paid for that have been approved for like 5 or 6 months, and they can get up to 12 months worth of rent paid for. And overall, like, as far as landlords and stuff, some of them have had private landlords and some of them have had like a rental, like an apartment complex, and they've all been really willing to work with them. They've been successful in obtaining money from the program, so they're willing to wait. Even though the program takes a while, they've been okay with waiting for it because they know in the end it's probably going to pay out. I just had a client apply today, and he was having a few little blips in communicating, and I told him what to do and how to follow up, and he got a little bit more information. He kind of got a verbal, like, you're most likely going to be eligible for it. So that made him feel a little bit better, but he probably won't know for like another 2 weeks or so.
Right.
And as far as information, they're asking for, not like social security card and stuff like that, but they're asking for to show the income difference, basically pre-COVID and now. It could have been changed any time between March 2020 and now, essentially, any decrease, but. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for letting us know.
think someone also mentioned, you know, legal services. So I think just as a suggestion, if you are looking for a place to start as well, making some relationships with landlord tenant court staff, if possible, as well as your local legal services. I don't know, in New Jersey, there's only one city that has a right to counsel for landlord tenant court. I'm not sure what that looks like in other places, but there, what New Jersey has decided to do is use some dollars to create an access to counsel pilot to add three more communities in that. And we see that as a great use of dollars. And we're actually one of the pilot agencies working with the state and legal services to help do mediation. And there were a flexible pot of dollars that we can have as well, so that we can try to, you know, use all of the dollars that are out there. And when, you know, we fall a month short or someone needs a car repaired so that they can get to work, we've got this flexible pot of money that we can use to help people. And it's not contingent on documentation status either. So it's very approachable for us. So there are projects like that to look out for too, or to suggest to your state agencies. And also, I wanted to mention housing counseling. HUD certifies housing counselors. Are any of you HUD housing counselors? But in New Jersey, the Housing Community Development Network is an intermediary supporting lots of HUD housing counselors. And they've traditionally done home ownership work and, you know, maybe foreclosure prevention work. But in this pandemic, and Arnold, chime in if I'm getting it incorrect, they're adding in mediation and rental counseling. So that's another resource to look for certified HUD counselors to help your clients in this moment. And it also sounds like you're all, you know, really doing a good job of jumping in as mediators also to work with the landlords. But that's another, you know, we have to take this on all of these levels, you know, on the one-to-one level, with the person in front of us, watching how the dollars are being used, getting involved, inserting ourselves where we can in different groups and processes, being involved in advocacy to address the crisis at hand, and also this really incredible opportunity that dollars are coming in, and if we can get them used the right way, we can set people up to really have homes that they can afford and to end homelessness. It's a lot of money available if this budget goes through. So Arnold, did you have anything else to add on the housing counseling, how they're being helpful right now?
Well, again, sometimes a housing counselor can help negotiate with the landlord. So a landlord who's getting assistance will extend what is being done. You know, we'll ensure that a tenant is not going to be kicked out if they can't, you know, they got this assistance, and then when that assistance runs out, tenant doesn't get kicked out, or that the landlord's accepting 80% of the money that's owed. So a good housing counselor can be effective in helping extend those rental assistance dollars to be more effective for the client.
So allies for us out there, and I see someone else is talking about adding mediation. So there's a lot of this going on across the country, which is great in Boulder. Any other questions for Arnold? or anything I can tell you about what we're doing in our little corner of New Jersey.
I think, Laura, it'd be great to hear what you're doing in New Jersey, how you're sharing the information with the clients, like what it looks like, because, you know, part of the challenge is, you know, always it's important to know what's going on in the macro level, but this has to me been like nothing else with the level of things changing and how to try to have clients understand their rights. And so how as an agency are you sharing all that information and identifying clients who may be in danger of we've had clients who left, you know, left property they didn't need to leave.
Yes, that is a good point. Even during the moratorium, there continue to be illegal evictions, or people also self-selecting out because they're afraid of racking up the debt, and it's scary. But what we've done here is we really see that this is a crisis not only for our clients but our staff, the families of our staff. This is far-reaching, so we try to share information far and wide across the organization, because housing touches every program. While at RJFS, we do have what's called an Atlantic Homeless Alliance, where we provide homeless services and prevention services. We also provide supportive housing services for people with disabilities. But we know that the sister of our case manager is behind on her rent right now. You know, I mean, I don't know, but I know. So I want to make sure that everyone in the organization, no matter what program they're working in, understands their rights. So we send out the information. There's also been a utility moratorium in New Jersey, which has really been important and goes hand in hand with helping people watch that budget and avoid eviction. So we get the information out to all programs. And then at RJFS, our Atlantic Homeless Alliance staff are the experts, and we also infuse all of the eligibility criteria for the different programs, because there have been some rapid rehousing program dollars that have come through, some two different tranches of vouchers already that have come through. So this way, anyone calling into the organization gets screened for eligibility for this. So we put it at like the top. They might be calling for food, they might be calling for therapy or case management, but we're also going to say, hey, do you know there's an eviction moratorium? You mentioned you're having a little bit of this stress going on. You might be eligible for this. Can we send you on for an intake over here? Or they might call for a longstanding program in New Jersey called Homeless Prevention Program. But what they really want is this new COVID relief rapid rehousing program that they don't know about. So then we send them on for that intake. So that's how we've...
Laura, how do you make sure everyone gets that information? What does that look like? And all staff meetings?
Yes, training, training with all of the staff, and then lots of spreadsheets with, names who've been referred. It's been very hectic because the state has stood up the program, some of the programs very quickly, and we've had to get them names as fast as possible. And then they're following up, and then we're trying to help the state follow up so that we can find people as well. Really enlisting everyone. Like, I'm sure you all have enlisted, for those of you who do food, I'm sure it's been a total agency effort. Even people that never even touched your nutrition services before have been involved. We're trying to do the same thing with housing and homelessness, because it's so huge and such a looming crisis. And I know we sit here in New Jersey as knowing that we're good until January, but it's still very stressful for people to not have things resolved. So we want to get them vouchers that they're eligible for and back payments that they are too.
So Laura, are you the one who's responsible for doing the trainings, always updating everyone on the trainings, or is it someone else in your agency?
Yeah, it's our director of the Atlantic Homeless Alliance. Mm-hmm. So they train our Access Center staff directly. They share information at supervisors meetings. Mm-hmm. And you know, we just broaden the team when these things come along so that we try not to have anyone miss the opportunity. And then again, we also want to make sure, knowing that our staff are ambassadors to the whole community, to their own families who are struggling, we want everyone to have the information. And then we also get people involved in advocacy. The Housing and Community Development Network just had a legislative day. Well, you know, lots of good things are going on in New Jersey. The state budget was trying to redirect affordable housing dollars to another program. Looks like that win just came through today, Arnold. But you know, we try to get our staff involved in those advocacy efforts. So they went out to, well, we were on Zoom in our t-shirts, but you know, we had our team from JFS. We get them involved in advocacy also, because it just, I think it helps everyone stay the course when you're fighting the fight for the person in front of you, but then you're also working on the bigger picture at the same time when possible to bring people in. And we have this great opportunity to do this Access to Counsel pilot that we're really excited about. And there is just a deepening relationship with our local legal services. So I think it's also that helps our staff know what's going on as well. And there are Know Your Rights information from them. Actually, we're doing some tenant organizing work, and one of the lawyers is having dinner with us tomorrow night, outside pizza party. Going to just review with everyone what their rights are, because right now most of their concerns are the moratorium is on, but the habitability issues are pretty strong, because either landlords aren't putting money back into the property, and I'm sure you've heard this too, repairs, so people are kind of stuck. But that seems to be a big concern right now. So that's also what we do, is really just try to feed back the information so that as an agency, we know what we might need to do with, maybe if we've got a pot of money to add in, because you want it to stretch, right? So you want to, I think any JFS dollars that you might have, like we want a grant from TD Bank, the Housing for Everyone grant, and we wrote that to add in some case management support for the eviction crisis, but also a flexible pot of dollars to fill in some of those cracks there too. So if we have these, you know, and you know, you do this every day where you have dollars that you can use in a flexible way, we want to maximize what's out there first, then add our dollars in to make it work for people with solutions. So I think that's another reason why to really have that ear out to what's happening.
Well, one of the things I was struck by was that everyone in your agency knows about this so that they can make referrals, so that if someone just picks up the phone that isn't working in your Homelessness Alliance, or I'm not sure what the department was actually called, they would know to ask the right questions to get them to the right person. And I think a lot of times in many agencies that doesn't happen, because everyone's sort of siloed, you know, doing what they're doing. And I think that's something really important for this moment at this time.
Well, we keep trying to get it right. And we actually, I just left a meeting where we were talking about where we were missing the mark. So
We're always working towards improving, right?
It's very hard. It's very hard. But I think widening the team in a crisis like this is a good way to go.
Great way to go. Janice, did you want to say something?
Yeah, Yeah, Jen, you put in the chat that you, if I understand it, you have money for nonprofit attorneys.
Right, so there's a huge amount of money in, from what I can tell, in LA that has gone to, we don't have a right to counsel either, from what I understand, but that there's a network of attorneys to go to who've come together pro bono organizations to consult on evictions. They provide twice to three times weekly webinars with updates in English and in Spanish that I've attended. I'm trying to remember the name of the organization, Housing Rights Center. And, you know, between these messages, I just think they're saying, do not, I keep hearing, do not self-evict, tell your clients to call us. So they do the declarations properly, because probably maybe in other states as well, there is rent control protections in specific situations, buildings before built before a certain year. Also, we have different cities, and there are many landlords who would very much like their tenants to move out, even if they don't get any of the rent, because they can double or triple the rent. So it's these for us, for our clients, are like, once they lose, you know, we have someone paying $1,100 for a place they've been in 20 years. After, if they can't keep that, they have no options in this area, really. You know, they can get on wait lists, but they're going to be in a shared housing option, or, you know, so we're trying to reach everyone that we can to connect them with the legal protections. We have funding sometimes to help. The state has money, but really the legal. And they really helped us when we were applying for dollars to make sure they did the declarations properly. So I don't know if every state has that. Maybe Arnold knows, but it feels like money came in and suddenly there are many more attorneys available.
So we have something very similar in New Jersey that we've been working with in terms of volunteer lawyers. And you see that every time there's a crisis, you know, going back to, you know, the housing bubble in 2008, and all the foreclosure crisis, you see a lot of law firms that will allow their attorneys to do volunteer hours to help address that crisis.
Mm-hmm. And ours are mostly at this point through the larger pro bono organizations like Batesetic. So they have the infrastructure and they're regularly putting out the information. It's, they've been so much more available than I've ever seen before. And I think because of the platform of Zoom also, you know, there's been a different way that everyone's sharing things. So that's been a positive.
I don't have to drive 5 hours on the internet
right.
in California to go 10 miles. But no, this is very interesting. I don't know what's happening in Colorado. We have a few people from Colorado on this call. Are you guys doing anything with this? Mitchell, Jamie? Are you here? Oh, there
yeah,
you are.
Yeah, I can talk a little bit on the Colorado end. So we had some of those federal dollars that came in. That's currently what the state is working with. And then the JFS in Colorado also got some funding from the original state package that was put out. And so we've been working on getting both of those fund spend. We currently don't have the federal funding. Supposedly it's coming, we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
But the state, at least in Colorado, the state's been kind of in the same place that it sounds like everyone else has been, as far as the waiting game is concerned. And we do have quite a few landlords that have been willing to work with us. Some of them have given us a little bit of pushback. It's been a lot lower than I think most of us anticipated it was going to be. So that was some very good news. And then we also have the same kind of idea with the legal services. We have an organization called Colorado Legal Services, and they're all pro bono lawyers that came together, and they have a whole division set for eviction prevention and tenant landlord mediation.
That's great.
So yeah, it's been encouraging. It's been quite the year, but
it's like, to say the least.
Yeah, and it seems like progress has been made, and hopefully it continues.
That's right. Thank you. I know I put you on the spot there, but thank you for stepping up and talking to us. So I don't know if anyone else wants to share anything that's happening in their communities. I don't know, Laura, if there's something that you want to say that you haven't said already.
I don't think so. I think, again, a couple more notes that I wrote were just things that people have already talked about are those relationships with the landlords. You know, there's a lot that can happen through just talking to people. The other thing I wanted to highlight, we've only seen a little bit of this, but we have seen landlords taking people to civil court to sue for the debt. So that's something to just keep an eye out and follow any consumer rights that will come along with that, and talk to your legal services about that as well. You know, it keeps people stay housed, of course, but then they're going to have to deal with these court cases for the debt as well. So that's something for, I think, us to keep an eye on. I was curious, in New Jersey, of course, we're so short on affordable homes. For people who were homeless at the time of the onset of the pandemic, some resources have come through to rapidly house them, but our housing stock is impossible. Like, we're having such a hard time finding acceptable units. I'm sure, I'm looking at Jen, I shouldn't even ask California, but you know, I don't know if that's something everyone's struggling with too. So like another part of this in the big picture is that I really recommend that we have to advocate for new units to be made, or we're never gonna get out of this. It's been really tough to use some of those opportunities.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
We have, I don't know if other areas have this, but before the pandemic, what became, you know, something we got used to is sort of people living in their cars. And now there's safe parking in LA where people can register their car and park in certain areas. Because obviously this was a huge crisis before, and when we don't have a homeless service contract ourselves, but we see at our food pantry and through our different programs, including mental health, we work with clients who are unhoused. And, you know, as they were housing people, but more were falling into homelessness than they could house. So it's just such a cycle because of the high level of rents. And now I do see that money is coming into play, that they're trying to build different, we have spas, different supervisory districts, and they're trying to build in each district. And there's so much back and forth on that. Mm-hmm. But it is a challenge for sure.
I think this is why Arnold highlighted the need to watch the federal budget all the way through for the new HUD dollars. And
what's been unfortunate for me in this group is I thought, well, other areas would have more opportunity. And when we get together in these larger groups, North Carolina, everywhere really shares these challenges. And that doesn't seem like, you know, an easy place for people to go to. Not that it's easy to pick up and move anyway, but you don't hear of many great ideas for people to move to for housing.
What about Detroit?
I was thinking, I don't know. What about Detroit, Dina?
So, chatting with someone about this. No problem. It's interesting. We're seeing a huge increase the last couple of weeks in people asking for help in hotels. And we've done that occasionally. Maybe we'd help someone once a month, usually if it was a domestic abuse situation. Mm-hmm. But we're getting almost every single one of our intakes the past week has been, they've been homeless, they've been staying in a hotel, they're asking for us to continue to pay for the hotel. We did have the federal dollars come down to the local level, and they are so swamped with applications that people are applying, but they're not going to hear back an answer for like one, probably at least a month. I would say like 4 to 6 to 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. So when someone's dealing with an emergency, they're still coming to us. So That's what's going on. We haven't had a huge increase in evictions yet, but we're also kind of bracing ourselves and looking for resources. We have a lot of our own financial assistance dollars in our agency, which we're very lucky for, but we're trying to help like maximize the government programs when we can. And we're saying, okay, anything that needs to be handled right away, we're just going to pay from our own dollars because they're available, and then encouraging anyone to apply for the federal dollars and just wait. But for the like two clients that have gotten through the system so far out of the dozens that have applied, they've gotten, one got like $2,500 in assistance. They're getting like high levels of amount paying back pay on rent and utility bills. It's just like slogging through the process.
Mm-hmm. What about low-income senior housing in Detroit? Is it available or are there wait lists?
It is. There are wait lists, but it's available. My area is more with non-seniors, and that's, I mean, it's just impossible. And even Detroit is like affordable housing, and our clients still can't, you know, meet the criteria. They still don't have the income to be accepted into housing, let alone a subsidized housing unit. So our seniors are somewhat better off, and they've been financially somewhat better off through the entire pandemic than our non-seniors.
Interesting.
Arnold, are you hearing that at your National Low Income Housing Coalition meetings that, you know, there are just similar experiences across the country?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think that's why, you know, nationally, the plan is, you know, if we get this infrastructure bill through, is to be able to take care of the two issues of, one, increasing the housing stock available for very low income people, and to be able to have, you know, vouchers universally available and acceptable, because those are the two critical issues to really address this problem. You know, it used to be in New Jersey that if you couldn't get a voucher in one place, you could send somebody another part of the state where they weren't being utilized. That hasn't been in existence for a long time. You can't even send people to Pennsylvania anymore to be able to use their voucher, because there's just, you know, there's not openings anywhere. So, you know, there's tighter markets, and, you know, Laura, you being in a resort, quote unquote, resort community is always going to be a tighter market. You know, where I live next to New York City is always going to be a tighter market. But as we hear, you know, around the country, there's no place, you know, the National Income Housing Coalition puts together what they call their out of reach report, that shows the cost of housing being out of reach for at what incomes. And there's data that's there that's very localized to every municipality, every county in the United States. And there's no county in the United States where somebody can afford the fair market rent who is making the, as a low income person.
Wow.
I have a question, Arnold. You know, I don't know if we have it here or not, but there was the idea that you can't turn people away legally because of their source of income, their Section 8.
So again, this is state by state legislation. This is something we get nationally. New Jersey has been blessed in that New Jersey, it is the law that it's called source of income discrimination. California has it, but there's many states that do not have those kind of rental protections, which is why we're trying to urge President Biden to have that in place nationally, because it's critical.
I don't think it helps a lot of the time, though, because I think somehow they still say no, and I don't know.
Yeah. So I mean, you're absolutely right. You know, there are ways around it. It's like any law. It's better to have it in place than not to have it in place. But yet what we see in New Jersey is a landlord will use credit scores, will use, you know, past history of eviction, you know, so there's other ways that if they really want to. But for most landlords, you know, the state has been very aggressive about going after landlords that will put on social media, you know, no Section 8. Mm-hmm. So for the most part, those kind of laws do work. You know, that kind of overt discrimination against, you know, racial, ethnic groups that was once there, you know, you don't see as much. Not to say that it doesn't happen. Of course it does. But it's just not as overt as it once was.
We have a lot of people who can't get a landlord to accept they have a voucher and they can't find a unit. But part of it's because of where they want to live.
Well, yeah, I mean, the other issue is and it gets a little bit into the weeds, but what we're pushing for is right now, for example, the fair market rent in New Jersey is decided over a certain amount of counties. And so you have rich places and poor places. So people that want to locate in a suburban area, those rents, the average rent in a suburban area is way too high to be able to use your voucher for, because the way the vouchers are calculated. So we're trying to, what an area can do is they can use what's called small market rents. And so that your value of your voucher is calculated for that specific zip code. And who we need to move for. And there needs to be, that needs to be mandated, and there needs to be funding in place to help that happen, because it's going to be more expensive.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you.
Arnold, you know everything. Laura was right.
I just want to mention, as I think we close up, that New Jersey, a respected polling center, the Eagleton poll, is that the name of it?
Yeah, that's it.
Did a public opinion poll in New Jersey and found that 87% of people in New Jersey are concerned and worried about affordable housing and affording a home. I know there was much more detail, but I think that while it's maybe tough to hear that we're all in it together across the country, but that you also have the public wanting this more, and our federal government is talking about housing more and as a right, and like never have I ever heard them talk about vouchers like they are now. Like like Arnold said, if you're eligible for food stamps, you get food stamps. If you're eligible for a voucher, only one in four people get it. So I think there's some hope.
Well, we want to thank you so much, Laura and Arnold, and everybody who was on this important discussion. And thank you to Jen Glazer and Lisa Lorraine Smith for organizing this. It's really fantastic. And so if you have any other questions, there's some great information going through the chat. If you have any other questions, certainly you can reach out to Lisa, and Lisa, you'll get them connected with Laura and Arnold if there's any follow-up. Yeah?
Right. If you give me the information, then I don't have to go back to you. I can just send it right to them and put it in our resource library.
It's really great.
But
and we'll see everybody again in August, right?
Yes. August what? Do we know?
3rd, I think.
August 3rd. Okay, terrific. Thank you so much for your time, both you, Arnold and Laura, and it's great seeing everyone.
Thank you. And to everybody,
thanks, Rebecca. Bye.
Thank you. And everybody on this group, if you have any ideas for programs, please send them our way.
Terrific.
Always happy to hear.
Bye. Thank you again.
Bye-bye.